If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of The Mind Pump.
Hey, guys.
Look, we talk about fitness, health, building muscle, burning body fat, making yourself a better person. But we also have a lot of fun in this episode. Here's what we talked about in the introductory portion of this episode. It's the first 47 minutes. I started out by talking about the game-changing chili pad Uller device I put on my bed, and it cooled down my bed and made me feel amazing. I actually had
some of
the best sleep of my life. And by the way, we are sponsored by Chili Pad, and we do have a massive discount for you. Just go to Chili Technology, that's C-H-I-L-I, technology.com/mindpump. When you go there, they're going to have codes for you for the biggest discounts that you can find on the Chili Pad and the Uller. Then we talked about the movie Twilight. Apparently Justin watched the whole series over the weekend and gave us his rundown.
I highly suggest it.
It was nice.
It's a comedy.
We talk about the Seattle event that we had over the weekend. Seattle, great town, great people. Again, we thank you guys for coming out.
Good times.
We talked about chairs that were invented to prevent both man spreading, and then somebody invented a chair to prevent she bagging. So it's a little
so
back
there
and
you
forth.
Go.
I'm so scared. I would be so scared to Google that term, by the way. We don't know.
Who knows?
It's
on there forever.
We all talk about the documentary The Great Hack. This is a must watch on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get if you can kind of get around the slanted political angle of it, it kind of highlights what's happening with our data right now and how we are. It's being used to manipulate us. Pretty interesting.
Breaks it all down.
Also, somebody won the Fortnite tournament, $3 million. They won more money than Tiger Woods did for winning the Masters. Boy, is that a sign of the times.
Those video game playing days are paying off.
Pretty awesome. I talked about some studies with mice that displays how fairness is an important component of leadership and hierarchies. And then if we give our prayers out to anybody who suffered from the tragedy in Gilroy at the Garlic Festival, we're thinking about you guys.
Yep.
Then we get into the fitness portion of this episode. The first question, why is it that I can leg press so much more than I can squat? So we kind of break down the differences between those two exercises and the benefits and detriments of
physics.
Each one. The next question, do poor food choices slow down the amount of muscle you can build for a hard gainer? In other words, if you're somebody who has a tough time putting on muscle, should you just eat a ton of calories, even if it's from garbage? Or will you benefit from eating healthy food? Next question. If you're a 40-year-old and you start training, you get bigger and stronger, build more muscle, burn more body fat, but you're still getting older. How does age affect your progress? So we talk all about aging and progressing in the gym. And the final question, this person wants to know what our thoughts are on the whole body positive fat acceptance movement. Also, final day. This is it. The last day for MAPS Anywhere, 50% off. If you don't act now, this promotion will not come back until late next year. So remember, MAPS Anywhere is our fitness program designed without gym equipment. So you can follow this program anywhere. All you need are bands and a stick, like a broomstick. Get phenomenal results, burn body fat, build muscle, again, half off. Here's what you do. Go to mapswhite.com, that's MAPSWHITE.com, and use the code ANYWHERE50, that's ANYWHERE50, no space, for the 50% off discount. Do it now. Again, it's the last day.
T-shirt time!
And it's t-shirt time.
Oh, shit, Doug. You know it's my favorite time of the week.
Woo-wee. Yeah. All right. We have five winners, two for Facebook and three for iTunes. The iTunes winners are Carrie Erickson, L2208, NNR Sellers, and for Facebook, Andrea Mendez, Carly Osika. All of you are winners in the name I just read to iTunes at mindpumpmedia.com. Send your shirt size, your shipping address, include your Instagram handle, and we'll get that shirt right out to you.
Dude, game changer.
What?
Game changer.
What?
Sports ball changer?
Yeah. No, the The chili pad.
Ah, I've been telling you, fool.
Dude.
Finally, you're on board.
Dude, well, when you look at the, well, for the people who don't know, for the audience who doesn't know, the chili pad or the Uller, which is another one of the products, that's the one I use.
The Uller.
It's basically a pad that goes under your sheets on your bed. So you take all the sheets off your bed, including the cover that goes over the mattress, and you lay this very thin, light pad that goes over the bed, and then you put the sheets over everything. And the pad uses water, so it's water that circulates through it, and you can
like a grid of little pipes. Or
yeah,
something.
And it so there's no EMF, right? There's no electronics in the actual pad on the bed. And what it does is it circulates water and it keeps it at whatever desired temperature you want it to be at. So if you want it to be warm, it could be warm. If you want it to be cool, it could be cool. And that thing can get cold. It can get down to like 50-something degrees. And so, you know, you guys used it. You guys raved about it. Before I got mine, I did some research on...
Of course you did.
The things that... The things that impact
I don't trust those guys.
Your sleep the most.
Read about this.
Yeah. The things that impact your sleep the most. And the obvious one being a dark room. That's a big one. If you sleep when there's, you know, something, you know, if your room's totally dark and there's no light coming from electronics, whatever, that makes a difference. And then the temperature. The temperature of the room and your body makes a huge, huge difference on sleep quality. Massive difference. One of the most impactful things you can do. So I was excited to try it out. So I put it on the bed, and I got they sent me the Uller one. So I've got two sides, right? So my side could be different temperature from Jessica's, and I could program it to change throughout the night, which is really cool.
I haven't done this part yet.
This is really cool now because, I also have a memory foam mattress, and for a lot of people who own memory foam, they're awesome. They're very soft. They conform to the body.
They get hot, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They reflect your heat back like crazy. So in the summertime, it's just stupid.
That's why I don't like them.
Well, now that I put the chili pad Uller on there, and I keep it at about 62, it just, you know what it feels like? The best way to explain it is to people who don't know what this feels, what I'm trying to say here. When you're in bed and it's hot and you slide your leg over to the side of the bed that you haven't been on, and you
like
feel that.
Nice and fresh and cool.
Yeah, or the cool side of your pillow.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like, but it's always like that now, even if I'm laying on it, because it's circulating this water and cooling it down. And what I did is I adjusted the temperature so that I found the right temperature for me to fall asleep, but then I set it to go up and warm up right around when I want to wake up.
Yeah, see, I haven't done this yet.
Now, here's what's cool, because I have that alarm clock, right? Remember how I bought that alarm clock that simulates the rising sun?
I got that one too, man.
Which I love, because I don't get that, you know, it just slowly glows, starts to...
Nice little birds chirping.
Yeah, the glow gets brighter and brighter and brighter, so it simulates the sun rising, and my body wakes up more naturally. Well, temperature does the same thing. As the sun rises... It starts to warm up a little bit, and that tells your body to wake up. So I've experimented with this now because I've had it now over the weekend. And what I did was I didn't set any alarm or anything. All I had was the chili pad, and I had it set at 62 for me to go to sleep. So it gets ready. So I go to bed. I usually in bed by 10, so I set it at 9. So by 9 p.m., it's on, and it's cooling the bed down. I get in there. It's already 62. I set the alarm for 6:30 on the Uller thing, on the chili pad. For the temperature to go from 62 up to 74. And I didn't set anything off. I didn't do anything else. No alarm clock, no nothing. Sure as fuck, I woke up. But it felt like I didn't get woken up by anything. It just felt like I...
Not because you peed the bed either.
Not at all.
That's my worry. That's why I haven't done it yet. Because it's just like, ooh, this is nice. I'm awake.
No. Yeah. But dude,
I don't want to wake up like that.
So here's what I'm doing now is I'm doing all this research into how body temperature changes while you sleep. So I don't know if you know this, but your body temperature naturally drops, I believe, 2 and 3 a.m., and then starts to go up a little bit. So I'm going to start messing with it too, because you can have several temperature changes throughout the night to maximize your sleep or whatever. Here's the other thing I noticed, and I don't know if it's because if I'm sleeping better or because it's cooler, but have you guys noticed you wake up less stiff? Have you noticed that?
That's interesting. I haven't really tried to.
I don't know.
I haven't put that together yet. Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just because I'm sleeping. Because I'm sleeping deep.
I'm sleeping harder. I've told you guys forever.
Like
that,
hard, right?
Yeah, I sleep way better. Yeah, especially traveling and then coming back. I had such better sleep, but I didn't know if that was just a ton of different factors. You know, just being in a different place and not having it.
I wonder if Uller could fix crying babies. Because if it wasn't,
just put one in there.
Yeah, because when we first got
a $1 trillion company,
I had it. I had it before Maximus came, and I was having full night rest all night long, but that hasn't happening anymore. But it has nothing to do with the temperature in my bed, because that's all good.
You will never, ever, ever have a night's sleep as restful as the ones you had before you had kids. Yeah. Ever. Even my kids are you know, they're older now. My daughter's 9, my son's 14. They don't wake me up in the middle of the night, obviously. They sleep throughout the whole night. Yeah. You still don't sleep as soundly because you still worry. Yeah. It's a little bit of worry there.
Courtney wanted to ask Uller if there's like a fart filter coming in like 3.0.
No.
Because that would help.
They actually sell charcoal underwear with a charcoal lining.
Do they really?
I swear to God.
Oh, my God.
It's underwear and then the patch. There's like a strip that, you know, goes down where the butt crack is.
Is that really a thing?
Does it work?
I've never tried it, but charcoal does, you know, it does absorb things.
Yeah.
It does. Doug could probably find it online.
Dude, I'm so curious about that.
Charcoal-lined underwear for farts.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
It really is not a problem. It's just fun to
talk. I feel like if Justin wore the charcoal-lined, you know, underwear for that, he would just blow the charcoal out so that...
there's just like black dust, like... Yeah. Pelting everybody with dust.
Yeah, it didn't work. Oh, here we go. See,
that'd be awesome.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
What's that called?
Subtle butt.
Subtle butt.
Oh, what a great name.
Charcoal. I got to put on my subtle butt.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah.
You
that reminds me. That's funny. I was going to bring this up later, but I was watching. You guys remember that Twilight series with the vampires?
It's a good movie.
Of course.
Are you serious? That was a good movie?
The first one's a good.
Come
story.
On, dude. Oh.
The first one's a good.
Okay,
story.
So I was dying, like dying laughing because of all the powers they gave them. We're so ridiculous, dude. They're so dumb. Like, so this girl, she has like a power to like put like a bubble over her. So like people can't like influence her. And so she's like putting bubbles over people. And so I got the bubble power. And then you got one that has like a shoot smoke, like a smoke screen out. And then like makes people paralyzed.
Hold on a second.
There's a glitter one. He's just throwing glitter.
We
got
to rewind for a second.
Yeah.
Because the first one was, I thought, okay, it was a good love story or whatever. I could see why kids liked it. Yeah. There was a lot of them after that.
This was like the last one.
Feel like you watched them all now.
No.
For you to know all this.
No, it was funny because we wanted to put something on that was like, you know, light and not heavy because there's a bunch of heavy stuff in the news. And so this was like, we put that on and I was just rolling, dude. There was so, you have to watch just the last one because it's like everybody using their powers against each other. And dude, like, where did they come up with this? It was like, I know who's in a relationship, that's my power. Like, what the fuck? That's so lame.
Yeah, we gotta bring back
than Aquaman.
We need the Lost Boys.
Yeah, they need to eat them.
Don't think I've seen them all.
Bro, it's comedy.
When I was a kid, I identified much more strongly with werewolves. People were like, oh, vampires. I'm like, fuck vampire, that would be a werewolf.
Yeah.
Were you guys there? Do you ever have that choice when you're like, think to yourself, like,
well, remember
one?
They had the series that I do like is, what's the one with the vampires and the werewolves that are competing against each other? And it's
Underworld.
Dark. Yes,
yeah, Underworld. That was a cool series.
Yeah, I liked the Underworld series.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm more vampire. They just got more swag, dude. Yeah.
They're more seductive.
Yeah, they get more style. Yeah. Better looking. Werewolves are like cool.
They're pale.
Yeah.
Pale.
I always thought I'd be a vampire over a werewolf. Yeah, during that series, like that series that you're talking about, because that's what I'm thinking about. What else? What other movie was there like vampires and werewolves?
I don't know, man. I used to love werewolves when I was a kid. I thought that was the coolest monster. You know,
yeah.
I actually used
American
to do this.
Werewolf in London.
Yeah, I actually used to do this. This is so embarrassing. When we would be driving home late at night from some family member, and I'm probably like 7 or 8, and it would be a full moon, and I would just stare at it while my dad was driving. Like, come on, you could do it.
Like willing it to happen.
It's gonna happen.
Squeezing it out.
I know I'm gonna do it. Be a werewolf. nothing happened.
Yeah,
I got weird. I just got hairier, and that's all.
Hey, what'd you guys think about Seattle?
Great.
It was a good time.
Great.
It was hot.
It was a little hot in there. Yeah, I didn't realize. You know why? Because Seattle's not supposed to be sunny and hot. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, there was no AC in our place. No, I felt bad for the fans.
We were trying to get those heat shock proteins. I think
there's a sweat lodge in there.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, every time we do these, man, I have such a great time. I always leave with this just renewed sense of like just drive and purpose and integrity. You know, I feel like okay, we got to do this, we got to do that. It just feels it's amazing to see all these people that choose to listen to us. They choose to follow us. It's like it's a crazy honor, you know, each time. I don't know how else to put it.
Speaking of the audience, that I tell you what was really interesting. And those that may not know this, I don't know if you saw the vlog that Drew did a few weeks back of Denver, but when we do a live event, we actually talk about the topics that we're going to bring up potentially at the beginning, which we don't do that on the show. The show's very... We just go, right? Pick our questions for Qua, and then we get going, and it's not as organized. And I think that's just because we're in a live audience. We want to make sure it's not fucking dry and terrible, mm-hmm. so we kind of go over that stuff. And one of the things that we talked about before we would go to the event, we're like, man, we got to bring up all this crazy news right now with Jeremy Buendia, with Larry Wheels, and with Sean Roden, right? Mm-hmm. All these big time bodybuilder people,
Influencer guys.
Yeah, right. Fitness influencer people.
We literally thought we have to bring this up because everybody's going to want to hear about it.
Right.
And so we're doing our show or whatever, our live show, and you know we're bringing things up and talking about them, and then I bring up Jeremy Buendia, and this is an audience of 100 something people, and nobody knew who the fuck he was. One person.
Yeah.
One person, I said, hey, do you guys know Jeremy? Have you heard about the thing with Jeremy Buendia? And everybody looked at me like I was crazy. I said, who knows who Jeremy
Buendia? It was crickets,
one
bro.
Person.
It was the funniest thing we've done yet at a live event that like totally shocked the shit out of me.
Okay, we're going to move on.
No.
But it was really cool, though.
Yeah, I like it. I like it because it's showing that our audience is, everyday fitness people mm-hmm. who want to work out and get in. It's not, and we do have the hardcore, physique competitors and bikini competitors that listen to us and stuff, but it's a small segment of our audience, you know? And it is a niche. That is a very niche market. The average person has zero idea who those people are and could give a shit about Mr. Olympia and all that stuff.
But for me, it was really an example of how much we've kind of outgrown that. Like when we first started, remember I was right in the middle of competing. We were going to my shows. We were always talking about that stuff because it was what I was in the middle of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just was a reflection of how much the show has kind of changed and molded and the audience that we have.
I wish mm-hmm. I would have found that out mm-hmm. before I brought that up. It's so funny.
It's great because you brought it up too, because that's something that I probably would have brought.
Well, now I'm going to talk about this and you guys don't really give a shit, do you? Because I didn't bring anything else.
yeah, exactly.
This is all I brought.
Yeah, it was a little strange. Yeah, but it's always interesting. It's funny. And then the questions are always different at each one of the events. And I think that it's great. Some people try to get deep and like have like these really like want to peer into our individual lives and all this, but then like some of them are very specific, very very specific to like certain names in the industry and like what are our like exact thoughts about that. And so it's fun, man. It's almost like wheel of whatever
questions.
Like here comes wheel of questions. It's almost like it just makes it more exciting because you just don't know.
Now, this was who had family there? Both of you guys did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
My cousin
was
there.
Yeah, you had your cousin there and then...
my cousin.
Yeah. Oh, and their baby was so cute.
There was two babies there.
Yeah, there were two.
Yeah, that was cool.
One was from my friend Hannah came and she brought her little baby. So we had two babies in the audience, which... You know, we're not really an appropriate baby show.
I mean, it's,
we're not good for babies.
I don't know.
No, but it was, how was it?
Fitness
how
early.
Was it for you guys doing that in front of family members? Oh, you did this last time with your mom was last time.
Yeah, so the last two, I've actually had family, right? So, mm-hmm. well, I actually, Katrina's mom and sister came to one of the other events. So her parents, her mom and her sister came to the San Jose event. My mom came and her husband came to the San Francisco event, and then now I have my cousins came to this last event in Seattle. So I've had family there, mm-hmm. everyone, all of them. I prep them ahead of time that, hey, I love you guys, appreciate the support, but I actually ask them not to ask questions and to mm-hmm. not come over and really talk to me very much. Doesn't mean I don't go over and make sure. I made sure I went over and said hi to my family and stuff. But I just know that what happens every time at these events is, you know, I try my best to make sure I get like some try to get quality time with everybody that's there. I mean, we keep it intimate enough to where it's not like this, you know, where you don't get to talk. I mean, we try all. I think at one point, one of us touches everybody, right? At one point, all of us get a good conversation, I think, with everybody because it's a small enough group, just 100 people there. So,
yeah.
So I asked my family if they show up to these events. You know, I appreciate the support and all, but, you know, leave the talking to me when I can see you on a normal family event where these people, you know, some of these people are traveling all over.
Someone from Alaska. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you almost feel like, yeah, I definitely want to talk to people that have made that kind of an effort to come see us and, you know, connect with them, you know, in person. And so when I had family there, it's, again, I should have probably done a little more prepping with it, but it was, again, there's no context there, like, because none of my family really even listened to our show. So it was kind of weird. It was like, she had no idea. My cousin had no idea what to expect, but she was like, it was weird, but it was really cool, you know, to see you guys, you know, in your element and answering you know, all these questions for people and stuff. And I was, you know, she's like, I was like a proud sister out there, you know, watching you guys up there. So yeah, it was cool.
So I didn't have any family for this one, but the last one, two shows ago, right? We went to San Francisco and I had, I don't know, I think I had like 9 or 10 of my cousins and close family members there. And I get up there and I remember feeling just a twinge of this, which was this feeling of, because you have a dynamic that there's different dynamics that you have with different circles and groups of friends and family members. And with family members, the dynamic sometimes can be like back when we were kids, you know, like they know me a different way than maybe you guys do or maybe than the audience does. So I remember feeling that for a second, like,
yeah,
but then being like, no, this is the dynamic that I'm going to present. This is what they're going to see and whatever. But I could feel how it's interesting, right? To have people there who've known you for so long.
Oh, it was really strange. And I was dealing with that a little bit. Cause it, again, like she like had no idea. Like I'm a totally different person, you know, than I was like when I was in high school and all that. So that was interesting. It was a real interesting experience for me to have somebody like that has known me since I was a kid to just see me now, like what we do. It's totally different.
There was a gym over there. So when we got there, we all had planned on working out, but Adam had to take a nap because he was tired.
Zoom? Is it pronounced Zoom or Zum?
Zoom.
Zoom.
So you missed out on this gym, which was phenomenal.
It was rad.
Awesome gym down the street from where we were staying. We walk over there. And it's like a personal trainer gym, but it's pretty decent size. And we go in there and I talk to the manager and I tell him who we are and I say, hey, can we film in here while we work out? And he was super awesome about it. Met two fans in there. They took pictures with us. Great place to work out. So if you're in the Seattle area.
Oh, yeah. It's a true trainer's gym. Yeah, yes. For sure. Yeah.
Well, is it a private gym or is it a public gym?
No, you can pay a day fee and become a member. But you can tell that they're geared towards personal training and clients.
Yeah. Got it.
So, but it's bigger than just a studio.
Got it.
Smaller than like, I would say a huge
24.
Yeah. Like a huge gym or whatever, but great place.
Yeah, so it's a great space.
If we go back up there. That's definitely the place I'm going to, I want to work out at. They had like all the functional stuff and heavy bags. And I mean, Justin was loving it. They had chains and all that stuff. It was a good place to work out. So check this out. Did you guys see the chair this woman invented this chair and then she got like all these awards for her? What? And it was to prevent man spreading. Did you guys see this?
What? Wait, what?
Yeah, it's the dumbest thing you've ever seen in your life. Okay. So do you know what man spreading is?
No.
Okay.
We're opening it up so the boys can get some breathing time.
So it's this complaint that some people have against men saying that when we sit somewhere, we man spread. We take up a lot of space and that it's sexist or whatever.
Oh God! Yeah, are you serious?
Yeah.
This is a thing.
Yeah, no joke. This is for real. This is a for real thing.
I cross my legs.
People
all the
are
time.
So annoying.
Yeah, people are stupid. Anyway, whatever. But it's a big thing, and it's like this. Whatever. Okay. So this woman invented a chair that'll prevent man spreading, and it won awards. Now this chair has to be
please pull this up.
Oh, there it is, right there. It's basically a fucking V that goes. So you're sitting on it, and it forces your legs together. See on the right.
That guy looks real. Yeah, manly.
Except it's the most uncomfortable chair of all time.
Could you give me a zoomed in version of this, Doug? I want to see this.
It looks like the most uncomfortable chair of all time, and if you flip it around, then it becomes a spreading chair. So you can actually use it both ways. But anyway, they release this chair. This woman makes it, releases it, wins awards. But then it becomes this like joke on the internet, and memes are made about it like crazy. Everybody on the internet is just destroying it, making fun of it. It's called an anti-man spreading chair.
I can't believe I've never heard of this.
So yeah, it's so dumb.
Yeah, and she won awards over it.
She won some award. Look how uncomfortable it looks. Look at the back. Like who the fuck's gonna sit on that? Yeah, get out of here. So dumb. But anyway, everybody's making fun of it on the internet. Total joke, stupid, right? Dumb complaint. But anyway, I get being, you know, what's the word? Not, you know, being conscious of people around you. I get that. But I hate the whole, like, let's slap it on men and make it a man. Anyway, so it turned into a big joke. So this guy invented a chair in retaliation, thought it would be funny. And he came out with the anti-shebagging chair to prevent
shebagging.
And this is a chair that's got a hole in it, and it prevents women from using the chair next to them to hold their bags. So men manspread, which takes up a lot of space, and women put their shit next to them, then you can't sit down in the chair. So I thought it was...
Quit shebagging it.
I thought it was absolutely hilarious.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude.
It's good times.
Where do you find news like this?
You know what,
dude?
I didn't even know this was a thing. I have a 14-year-old son that looks at memes and sends me shit, and then people send me memes. And memes are today's political cartoon.
Yeah, it's satire.
You will get your finger on the pulse of what people are thinking and all that shit. So there it is. German company invents subway seats against shebagging.
It's like a toilet. Looks like a toilet seat.
It does, dude.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that great?
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, anyway, speaking of modern times and whatnot, I watched that documentary on Netflix.
Which one?
The Great Hack.
Oh, Great Hack. You're good. We all finally watched something at the same time.
Dude.
Yes, I watched that.
I'd give the audience a little bit of a rundown. It's a documentary, and it's about how tech companies are using data on you and doing it brilliantly in ways to influence you to vote in particular ways for political parties. And I thought that part was phenomenal and brilliant and a little bit scary is not the right word, but eye-opening.
Well, they've created like personality profiles from all these like data sets that they're able to like aggregate. And so they know your tendencies. They're getting really, really like specific and good about knowing your tendencies.
So I really enjoyed it, although it was extremely slanted.
Oh, the spin they put on it was stupid.
Right.
Because the spin they put on it was to show how the Trump campaign and the Brexit campaign, who both used this company called Cambridge Analytica.
Well, didn't Obama's administration use it previous to that?
That's the thing.
They were the first to do it.
Why didn't they get highlighted?
That's the thing. It's the spin is stupid. It's everybody is trying.
Everybody wants to win.
Everybody's trying. All political parties are trying to do everything they can to persuade us. And just like everything else, it's a market, and the market is, there's a lot of money in that market. I think the last presidential election generated $1 billion. There was like $1 billion worth of donations or whatever. So with that much money and that much power, remember this, government has their hands in the market. And whenever anything that any, if you're a referee in the game, it becomes valuable to try and influence the referee. And the government has their hands in the market. And so there's a lot of money that goes into trying to get political parties to win because then they can influence business and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so big tech is a big part of it. And what they're doing very brilliantly is they're able to, through these data points, which they can gather at like 5,000 of them on you if they want, easy, they can very accurately predict which direction you're going to go and how to target you. That's all it is. It's targeted.
And they're targeting the ones that look more indecisive. Yeah, about like which side to go. And so it's, okay, now you're going to get inundated with their campaigns like like very specific type of imagery and things to kind of get you to think in their direction. And
I don't see anything wrong with it.
This is just an evolution of what they've always done.
Yeah, it's smart. Yeah. I mean, it's smart and it's inevitable. It's happening.
Sure.
I found it interesting when she made the statement that data has surpassed oil
trillion
as what's more
valuable,
as the most valuable commodity on Earth right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
Yep. And that to me is really fascinating.
Now I did like her argument about your personal data that's on you, that you should own it.
You should have ownership.
I think I might even agree with that. And here's why I agree with it. I'm trying to use an analogy that I think all of us can kind of understand. Okay. If we look at the market for food, it's relatively free in the sense that as long as they don't poison you, food manufacturers can design foods to attract as many customers as possible. And with modern technology, they've been able to hack basically palatability. They've been able to hack how foods make us feel to the point where they spend a lot of money in science and they design and develop these hyper palatable foods. Now, at the end of the day, it's our choice to buy the food. They can't force us. But they've done such a fucking good job that they've made everybody fat and sick. Mm. And so when you look at data like this, I get persuading people, but this is getting to such a point where they can literally psychologically manipulate you with news articles, alerts,
you feel about
ads,
that?
Everything.
Yes, in terms of the using the psyops in that argument of like the same tactics that they use to influence like an entire group of people, it's so, like they literally can do that pretty accurately.
They've been doing it forever. That's the point. Just like we've been trying to make food tastier forever.
Yeah.
They've been doing this forever. Yeah, with but manipulating. That, but now they're fucking at a whole nother level.
Well, I think that's a great analogy because to the same point, I don't hold those companies accountable for that. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it still is your choice. At the end of the day, you still allow yourself to be persuaded. Like it is your final choice. Nobody forces you to vote a certain way. Nobody forces you to buy the Dorito bag.
Right.
You make that decision.
This is more effective marketing.
I believe, exactly. I believe in free will. I believe that we should be able to do that. And I believe companies should be allowed to target you that
way. It is tough though, because I mean, if you do look at it and look at how like far apart we are from each other now in terms of like how strong it's emboldened certain viewpoints and how they've been able to manipulate people and sort of expose a lot of shit in terms of like the Russians coming in and then building up these like forums and things to get people against each other. Like it works.
But again, it's been happening forever.
And again,
propaganda's been happening.
It's still
forever.
Your responsibility.
It's still
your responsibility to fact check all that bullshit. Here's the thing, because you always got to look at the other side too, the positive side. Like I think of something, for example, on what we're building currently here right now. So as we attract more and more leads into our community, part of what happens on the back end is us trying to segment our audience so we know what content we should serve those people. Now, of course, we come from a better place. We're not trying to manipulate you to vote one way or another, but we are trying to segment the audience, figure out what things you're reading, what things you like to listen to. That way, what we don't want to do, let's say we have 100,000 emails. We don't want to send 100,000 people an advertisement for skinny dipped almonds or something that they're not interested in. But if you're somebody who loves that stuff and has already bought it a bunch of times before and there's a sale going on it, we want to be able to show that to the 5,000 people that would love to get that. Just like there's certain things that I do want to be served up because if we can build algorithms to figure out what things that we're interested in and we do want to know about or we are interested in listening or learning, then I do want that stuff sent to me. So there's a positive side to that too.
I'm on both sides. I do think the data that's collected on us, I think there's an argument to be made that we should be able to own that and that we should be able to access it. Like I should be able to go to a company or an advertiser and say, what's the data you have on me?
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
You know, like,
agree,
what do you know about me and what do you think
that,
about
I
me?
I agree that I should know who has my data.
Yeah,
like, so that I agree with. That, like, that's fair.
That I could see as being fair. But you're absolutely right. This is a game. It's been the game forever. Now, that documentary tried to spin it to make it look like it's only the Republicans and it's only conservatives.
Yeah, fear-mongering.
Complete fucking bullshit.
No, it's all across the board.
All the sides are doing it. They're all using their best tactics.
Yeah, it's just who's winning, who's doing a more effective job. Yeah. But
dude, people, here's the thing, we've known this for a long time, people are not that hard to manipulate.
Well, that's my concern.
They're not.
Yeah, because I mean, in seeing like what's going on with China and just like how everything, they just have so much say and control over like the entire population because of the fact that can just add these little, parameters around what's gonna, they're gonna like or not like, and it's gonna affect everybody's behavior.
Don't you feel like this is the natural evolution though? Like this, to me, this is what will evolve us from not being easily manipulated, because it is so easy that in the future, or of us this being around for a long time, people will be like, you idiot, just because you read that on Facebook, now you think that. Like, that is going to be said more and more times going forward, that it's going to force people to evolve and
like
become
a tipping point with it.
Yeah, right. It's going to get so crazy that we talked about before, what's real, what's not real, that it will force us as a society to start to fucking do our research, to fact check things, to not just believe it.
What it really is, verified information.
Right. Well, so to me, it seems like it's the natural progression.
The checks and balances is that there's people on opposing sides that are using the same technology and trying to influence the people who are, straddling both sides, the people who haven't made up their decision. If you're a hardcore conservative, a hardcore liberal, they're not targeting you. You're there. They're not going to waste their money or time with you. But majority of Americans are actually somewhere in the middle, believe it or not. Less and less people now associate with one side or the other. And they're going to be targeted. They're going to be targeted by both.
Yeah.
They're definitely going to be targeted by both. But I don't know what it's going to look like in the future, Adam, if we enter into a future where we distrust everything. Because when you distrust everything, and that's the future we're headed, with AI, computer generated faces and characters that you can't tell the difference. They could take my voice and make it sound like I said something. They could, I don't know what that's going to be like. A future where we don't trust anybody.
Super apathetic about everything.
Or is that going to open up a market for fact checking and verification and that kind of stuff, because people are going to demand it?
I think it's going to be both.
Yeah, maybe.
I think you're both right. I think it will be like that.
I don't know, man. It's weird, but people are very easily, super easily manipulated. Do you guys remember when we were kids?
It's frustrating, man.
Do you guys remember when we were kids? All that the hoopla that went around about killer bees coming to the U.S. Oh no, there's killer bees.
Yeah.
And everybody made a fucking big deal about it.
Yeah.
Okay, they're still here. Nobody gives a shit anymore. Nobody here. Have you heard anything about no killer bee?
No.
Nobody cares. Yeah. They're still fucking here.
They were like in New Mexico last time I heard.
The reason why it was a big deal is because they decided to make it a big deal. And fucking the news articles, and everybody freaked out about it.
That's how I feel about the internet and social media in general. Like, I feel like there's been things that have always been happening, but and it's not really that frequent. It's just that there's a new platform to really expose it, like real time.
Think about it this way.
More and more people know that now than what they did 5 years ago.
It still works though. Think about it this way.
Yeah, we're still at the beginning.
How many murders do you think happen every year in the U.S., right? Tons, right? Thousands of murders, because we're a massive country. Thousands of murders happen every year. Of those thousands of murders, there's going to be at least a few that were committed by an illegal immigrant, for sure. It's just the odds, the numbers, it just has to happen. I'm sure
let's just get that specific information and put it out there like it's an epidemic.
Yeah, and make it a news article. And it's true, they're not lying, but now because you're an undecided voter, they're going to fucking keep, every time an illegal kills somebody, that's the article you're going to see, even though maybe it makes up less than 1% of the murders. Now it's skewing your percent. And I'm just using one example.
And that's a perfect example of what's happening right now. It's already happening right now. And what's going to happen, though, 5-10 years from now, is everyone's going to be privy to that. Right now, there's a lot of dumb people that don't know any better, but we were also a bunch of dumb cavemen at one point running around, too.
That's what I hope.
Eventually, everybody will know
that's what I hope.
That's the natural progression of all of this.
But that's what I hope.
I hope you're right, but I don't think so.
Do you guys read that meme that I shared the other day? It said, hey, remember when we used to think that if everybody just had access to all the information, that everybody would just be smart and understand things? And here we are, access to all the information, and everybody knows more, but everybody's also seems to be dumber. Right. Seems to be less wisdom and less logic. So I don't know, dude. I don't know if that's the answer or if it's just going to, who knows, man.
Turn to idiocracy.
Yeah, but I thought it was fascinating. I didn't like the slant. I did think it was fascinating. I think the future of political part, I mean, let's let's watch what happens. The Trump campaign was just better at it than the Hillary campaign, and Obama did it better than his competitors. Let's see what happens with the next one. You know, it's going to be kind of interesting.
Yeah, you want to know? Yeah, you talk about changing times. How crazy is this? So I saw this meme floating around, and it was, I brought up at the live event. I don't know if you guys, my cousin, her husband works for the company who does Fortnite. I forget the name of the company who owns Fortnite.
Oh, right.
And he told me that weekend while we were up there that they were giving away $30 million in prizes.
They had a big tournament.
And they had the big tournament, right?
Yeah, so crazy for a video game.
The guy who won, it was just announced yesterday or the day before, he won 16-year-old kid won $3 million.
First place, yeah.
Oh, my God. And imagine if you're his parent, dude.
And the meme that was floating around was him holding his trophy up, and then because it kind of looks like a golf trophy, and you've got Tiger Woods holding up a Masters trophy and his purse, what he won for the Masters, and then what this kid won. And it's crazy that, think about that, dude. I mean, golf, we've known for a long time, very long time, is a very prestigious sport. It's always been some of the biggest purses and money to be made there. It's up there, right?
Yeah.
So to see this, you know,
make more
video game for a 16-year-old, I mean, it's crazy how much.
It's a totally different world.
How much has times changed. Well, and you should see, did you guys see the audience?
Oh, it's insane.
Oh, bro, it's a packed arena.
Yeah.
Watching these kids play. It's insane to me.
It's only going
to
get bigger.
Epic Dude. Games.
Oh, yeah. No, this reminds me because I was reading, I might have brought this up, I don't remember on the show, but I was reading The Far Side, like one of the books, to my kids. And I saw one of the cartoons. It had this kid sitting in front of the TV, like this old, and this was probably, I don't know, early 90s, maybe even earlier than that. And this kid's playing like a remote controller. He's playing video games, and the parents are behind him, like having this like thought process of like, oh, you know, our kid, like it's this wanted ad that says like, you know, if your kid is really good at Mario Brothers and, you know, awesome at like Zelda and this and that and the other, like we'll pay like $100,000. And it was like, ironically, like you'll never make money playing video games. So that was the joke, right? And to see now where we are, this is like the perfect example of like we're completely in a different world.
It's funny to me too, because you think about what's happening in like sports with concussions and injuries and all the argument over who should make money and not make money if you're in college or pro and all that shit. And then you see like this rise of the virtual world. And people making more and more money that way. It's like, it makes me wonder, are we going to see this flip-flop in our lifetime where it's less cool to play sports at your... like, because still, when you're in high school, the Letterman's jacket, to be playing in a sport, to do all those things like that, like that's still like a cool thing.
Yeah.
But is it going to flip-flop where less and less people are, you know, striving to play professional sports, and more of them are rather play it on a virtual, in the virtual world. Because if you can make as 100%. Much money, you're safe. You don't fuck your brain up whatsoever. There's way more people that can be all shapes and sizes and still be badass in that world. Like, it levels the playing field. Interesting.
I think so. I think it will, because kids watch way more video games than they watch sports. And as they get older, they're the spectators. And what are they going to want to watch? Are they going to want to go to a Fortnite tournament, or are they going to watch a live golf game or whatever? So that's the future right there.
Yeah.
Go on YouTube. The kids ain't watching clips of athletes doing shit.
No.
In fact, a lot of kids don't even know the names of athletes, but you ask kids who won the Fortnite tournament.
PewDiePie or whatever these
Do you know who Tiger Woods is? They'll be like, no. Who won the Fortnite tournament? They'll give you the kid's name right away.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. I was watching a video last night on I was watching a Jordan Peterson talk, and he brought
the one you sent over to me.
Yeah, and he brought up a couple studies that I thought really illuminate you know, what good leadership is all about, right? So he talked about how in the animal kingdom, you know, animals will develop kind of hierarchies just like humans do, where you know, some perform better than others or whatever. Uh-huh. And he was talking about how hierarchies are not based off of power and tyranny. He goes, if they are, they get very unstable. And he says, like with chimps, if there's a male chimp that's just the most dominant, but he just terrorizes all the other chimps, at some
He's
point...
He's going to get overthrown.
Yeah, at some point, two or three of the other chimps are going to band together and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And with mice, they did this mouse study where mice like to wrestle with each other and play or whatever. If you put a big mouse with a smaller mouse, the big mouse will dominate the smaller mouse. But if the big mouse doesn't let the smaller mouse win at least 30% of the time, then the smaller mouse will stop playing with him. So the big mouse, although he's dominant, still understands that he has to let the other guy kind of win every once in a while.
You see this with dogs.
And so and this is fascinating. This is interesting because, you know, good leaders are people who are not the, you know, like everybody thinks like in the movies you see like the bad guy, the boss or whatever, he's an asshole and he drives everybody and he's, that's not actually a very effective, you know, leader or
You're
boss.
You're not going to keep a lot of people around.
No, no, no. Anyway, I thought it was really cool.
No, so, you got to make them believe they still have a chance, right?
Give them some wins every now and then.
That's what I used to do with my brother playing ping pong all the time.
You still let him win
because otherwise, he'd stop playing.
Yeah, he'd want to play with you no more.
Yeah, I mean, it's just common sense.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to say a few words to the anybody who knew anybody that was in at the Gilroy Arctic Festival.
What a tragedy.
Unbelievable.
Terrible.
I can't believe that happened.
Mass shooting right in our backyard. I almost went.
Oh yeah, no, that's fucking common. My Katrina's family is there almost every year. I'm surprised they weren't there this year. We were all freaked out about that.
Yeah. So, and
have you heard how many total?
I don't know.
It was like 11. 15 injured.
Yeah, 11 was the last I had.
There
heard.
Was a 6-year-old boy.
Oh my God! Yeah, see, that kills me inside.
Yeah, it destroys me. They shot the guy. The guy who did it he got killed.
Oh,
yeah.
Now are we on to the bottom of why he did it, or do we know what it was for?
I don't think that's been released yet. But I was watching. It was 3, and then there was 4 total, like dead, counting the shooter.
Yeah.
So, did the cops shoot him? Is that who shot him?
Yeah. Yes. Now, what I'm glad so far is they haven't shown the name or the face of the shooter yet. And I hope they don't.
Right, to give
that
them.
Would be good.
Because we found in studies that when we show the guy and we give him a lot of attention, it encourages more crazy fuckers to do shit like this. But if they don't get the notoriety, it kind of stops it, you know?
Yeah.
Piece of shit. Anyway, terrible. Prayers go out to all the people that may have suffered from that horrible event.
Absolutely.
This quaz brought to you by Organifi. For those days you fall short on getting your organic veggies or whole food nutrition, Organifi fills the gap with laboratory-tested, certified organic superfoods to help give your health and performance the added edge. Try Organifi totally risk-free for 60 days by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. And use the coupon code MINDPUMP for 20% off at checkout.
All right, our first question is from Koltsky Cox. Why can I leg press a much higher weight than I can barbell squat?
And that's because it's not a real exercise.
Oh, the good old leg press.
Boom.
You know, yes. the leg press has some utility. It's just not nearly as functional as a barbell squat. And that's because you're not supporting the weight with your whole body. You're obviously sitting in a chair and you're pressing weights with your legs. So there's a lot more needed from your body to do a barbell squat than a leg press. Mm-hmm. That also being said, a leg press doesn't give you a lot of carryover in comparison to a barbell squat. So if you want like real world applicable strength, getting stronger at a barbell squat is going to give you far more than a leg press will, because the leg press it's a machine.
Unless you're like up kicking somebody, right?
Yeah. Unless you're doing exactly that.
You're doing that like in MMA or something.
Well, I think this goes back to like why we still connect like the burn and the pump to an effective workout, right? Because someone who doesn't know any better, doesn't understand the central nervous system and how that works and plays a role, and just feels the workout, you can do a leg press and get a massive pump and your legs be burning and be sore the next day. And so why doesn't that compute to the same gains that I would get from a squat? So this is more common than I would think. That part of the reason why I wanted to talk about this, because I know that we kind of scoffed at it at first, because we expect if you've been listening to Mind Pump forever that you understand the importance of barbell squat. But the truth is, I mean, I was one of these kids that fell in this category that leg pressed forever and didn't barbell squat. Why? Because I wasn't good at barbell squatting. My low back used to bother me all the time. And I could do a leg press really good and it gave me a pump on my legs. And therefore, I justified training that way forever. And I know I'm not alone in that. So there's probably a lot of people that don't understand how much more benefit that you get from the barbell squat. And the main one that I want to point out, even though there's many reasons why, that was that really kind of opened my eyes was the benefits from the central nervous system that you get in comparison. And I love using the analogy that Sal is using. And so if you've been listening to podcasts forever, you're probably tired of me referencing that analogy. But I think it's such a powerful analogy for people when they are trying to, when you're trying to explain to them the benefits of the central nervous system or the role that the central nervous system plays. And that's thinking of it like an amplifier to your muscles or your, what we would say is your speakers, right? So if your muscles are all your speakers and your central nervous system is your amplifier, you, the amount that you build, how much stronger you make your amplifier by doing an exercise like a squat in comparison to that of doing a leg press is dramatic. And if you know anything about speakers and having a powerful amplifier, like you could have awesome speakers, but if you don't have a great amplifier, they'll never be producing what they're fully capable of.
No, a barbell squat just calls upon far more muscles, and a barbell squat is a far longer and larger range of motion.
Mm-hmm.
A leg press is a very short range of motion. If you look at a leg press, even if you do a good leg press, I'm not even talking about the idiots who do the 2-inch leg press at the gym because they want to look cool. I'm talking about people with decent mobility and hip mobility, because a leg press with good range of motion requires some of that. Otherwise, your low back kind of rolls off, which, by the way, makes a leg press actually very dangerous for the lower back if you don't have that kind of mobility. But even a full range of motion leg press, you're not fully extending your whole body like you are with a squat. It's a larger range of motion. Something that's more comparable to a barbell squat would be like a machine hack squat or whatever. It's a larger range of motion. Now, with the leg press, you can pile on the weight. You can add a lot of weight. But, you know, your body doesn't know how much weight you're lifting. It just knows tension.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I do 300 pounds on a barbell squat, full range of motion, and it feels hard, and I do 500 pounds on a leg press, and it feels not as hard, my body knows the tension. The barbell squat is heavier, even though the weight is lighter. Does that make sense? And so you have to factor in. So sometimes we look at the leg press, and we're like, wow, I can do 800 pounds on that.
You also got to think, too.
Yeah, it's on a track.
You guys didn't say it's on a sled at an angle.
Angles are completely different. Yeah. If you want to look at the force vectors and everything involved, and the gravitational force is way more intense when you get a barbell squat. And like you're mentioning, the lever is a lot shorter. And so, you know, you can kind of get away with, adding a bit more load to that, because it's, I mean, really just pushing a sled on a track. That's the extent of it.
And again, back to the CNS benefits from it. I mean, when you get under a squat and you put a barbell on your back, your traps, your forearms, your biceps,
so much more encompassing.
Your shoulders, your upper back down to your lower back, your entire, but your toes,
your core. You got
to
be tight.
Yes, your entire
everything has to stable your lies your
yes,
spine.
Your entire body is woke up and ready, and it has to be, because you're getting squashed. getting squashed by this weight that's on your back, and so the demand that it puts on the CNS, which the demand that it puts on it to adapt and get better and more efficient and stronger, is so much more than what you would do sitting on any machine. And the leg press is one of those.
And I like the leg press for an accessory. Like it's something that I could build volume with it. I could add it in. Squat is always going to be king for me. And that's something that I'm going to keep in my, programming, but then sprinkle in leg press. It's a great machine.
Here's where I love to throw my leg press in when there's a week where, because I'm typically, squatting some form of a squat at least 2 to 3 times in a week. And sometimes I overreach and my low back is sore as hell and my hips are super tight and I overdid it. Then the next training session when I'm hitting legs again, because I'm practically doing them almost every other day, I might do leg press to kind of pull back on the intensity of the training, because I kind of overreached a little bit from my squatting too heavy or too hard. So I think it's great. It's a great tool. But you can't even compare the two of them. They're not even close.
It's one of my favorite machines. Leg press is a good machine. I would consider it more of a mass building, muscle building machine than most other machines. But I agree. I don't think it's in the same category. I could think of five at least free weight exercises that I think will be superior to a leg press. But if you want to add a machine to your arsenal, a leg press would definitely be a good choice. One of my favorite, you know, leg building, muscle building workouts that I used to do back in the day was I would do barbell squats and then I'd do leg press. And that's a great exercise. Now, why did I do leg press after squats? Squats make your whole body tired. Leg press, I can sit in the chair, mm-hmm. brace my body, and now just
way less demanding.
I just finish off my legs. I just feel like you need to be doing a ton of volume in your workout to even justify throwing it in there, because like you said,
you can do split stance,
I
squats,
just think that the lunge, the Bulgarian split squat, the sumo squat, the front squat, the back squat,
and a barbell hack squat,
the step up, the barbell hack squat, all of these I think should be in the routine before the goblet squat. I mean, there's so many other exercises that are going to give you more bang for your buck before the leg press. Now, if you are training a ton and all those ones I just listed are regularly showing up in your workout, then why not throw a leg press in there every once in a while? It makes total sense. But
well, even step ups. I mean,
that's what, that was one of them I said. Yeah, I mean, hit those big rocks though. Hit the big rocks first. You know, and if you are addressing all the big rocks and hitting all those movements that we just listed off, then yeah, why not throw leg press in there too?
Yeah, but you know, machines also offer a little bit of, you know, let's say you have some pain in your hip and you're working on mobility, you can use machines at times to work around them while you're working on mobility as well. And machines offer that. It's more supportive. I remember when Justin, your hip was hurting, and you were doing all that stuff, and it was too sore to do anything with the free weight, and you did the leg press, light or whatever, and it made your hip, you know, feel better. It became a part of your, you know, kind of the protocol or whatever.
Yeah, it's a rehab tool.
Yeah, so I think there's a value there, but it for most people there's no comparison. You're just not. I used to do this experiment. I don't train as heavy as I used to, but I used to do this experiment all the time, especially as a kid. I would just do leg presses and hack squats, and then I would just do barbell squats. And for my legs, there's like a half an inch difference in terms of their size. When I squat, they get bigger every time. When I stop squatting, no matter what, I could do leg press and everything else. They just don't develop as much. I'd see this with clients as well. So it's just a much more effective exercise for most people in pretty much all parameters.
Next question is from Mark Wolves. Do poor food choices slow down the amount of muscle you build for the hard gainer? Or does it not really matter as long as you hit your surplus calories?
Absolutely.
Boy, as a kid, you know, trying to pack on size as what I thought was a classic hard gainer, I understood calories early on, right? Early on, I understood, oh, I just need to eat more food.
Load up.
And I became indiscriminate about what that was. I made sure to eat protein, of course, because I read that protein builds muscle. And then it was just calories, and it was milkshakes and ice cream and burgers and fries and pizza and whatever I could get in my face to gain more calories. Now, was this an effective strategy? Well, when I was younger, it was somewhat effective because I had I didn't try to eat more calories with other types of foods. I found it difficult, mainly because I wasn't preparing my own food. It was easy for me to buy other things, and those foods are tasty, and so it's easy to eat a lot of calories when eating those crappy foods. And so I did gain some weight as a result of it. Now, would I have gained more muscle had I done it the other way, where my food choices were healthier? I 100% agree. Poor food choices make you feel not as energetic. They affect your digestion. They don't give you the quality of nutrients as quote-unquote healthy foods do. And all that stuff takes away from your body's ability to build muscle. If you're not as healthy and you're pushing calories, you might gain more body fat, but I don't know how well you're going to build muscle.
Yeah, you're fighting against your body
in a state that way. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like trying to build an engine that grows faster, and gasoline is going to be the number one thing that's going to make the difference. So that's your calories, right? So making sure you have adequate calories. Being in a calorie surplus is going to be the number one thing for the hard gainer for sure to put on any sort of size, whether it be good or bad weight. So that's the gasoline. But all the other things, the timing belt, the oil, like everything else, that the tires on the car, all the other things that are factors of making that car go faster are definitely, and that's all your micronutrients, your macronutrients, and I think good sourcing too. But would you say too, Sal, if you were to compare, like, you know, if it was straight up 30 grams of protein, where you source that your body would assimilate it differently?
Well, protein quality, you know, makes a little bit of a difference. But the big difference for me is just health. Your body your body's ability to adapt to your training, which is, you know, when I say adapt, I mean build muscle, burn body fat, get stronger, right? So it's adapting to the stimulus. Your body's ability to do that is just better when you're healthier. It just is. And unhealthy foods promote poor health, both through poor digestion, and far more stuff. Inflammation, you can cause more inflammation in your body.
Gas, bloat, all that fun stuff.
Look, I had this experience with my boy. Like, my son right now is in this process of maybe he's trying to put on a little bit of size and build some muscle. And so he made the mistake of just eating a shit ton of garbage. He went to the mall with his buddies and he ate, you know, a bunch of burgers and onion rings and a bunch of stuff all at once. You know what ended up happening? He felt sick to his stomach and didn't eat for the rest of the day. So he kind of negated.
Right.
And I told him that. I'm like, well, see how you feel? You feel crappy. Now you don't want to eat anymore. So it was kind of a waste.
Right. It's funny because that used to be the mentality, was like, it's, you got to get over the hump of feeling bad, like slamming down so many calories. Like, it was like, there's like a threshold and you think it's going to get better on the other side of that. Like, you know, slamming these protein shakes and just constantly inundating your body with like a ton of bad calories that make you feel like, yeah, you have indigestion. You have all these like symptoms.
Well, this was one of the big game changers for me, being somebody who had a hard time putting weight on for a long time as a kid, was because I took a page out of your son's book. That's exactly how I used to eat. I would just, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and protein shakes and McDonald's and chicken nuggets and just anything, like fries, everything I get my hands on, I was just consuming. And what I found, what would happen was that stuff would either fill me up or make my stomach, it would satiate me so much that I wouldn't want to eat for the next 4 or 5 hours. And then even when I did eat, I still would have some of this residual. I'd still be full from the food that I ate 4 or 5 hours ago. When I started to clean the diet up and eat things like, you know, chicken and rice and stuff like that, I found myself hungry at every meal.
Easy to digest.
Yeah, my body was ready to eat more again, which helped me get to those high calorie numbers that I need. If I needed to eat 4,000 calories as a kid to make sure that I put on size, man, if I were to have a 2,000 calorie McDonald's lunch, it made it really tough to get the other 2,000 calories the rest of the day.
And then you go and get the performance dips. Like, I remember that, like being so like overwhelmed and like, oh, like just, I couldn't like have a really good performance in the gym as a result.
No, look, one of the challenges if you're a real true hard gainer, one of the challenges is getting more calories. So you do want to eat high calorie foods, just make them whole natural ones. So when we say eat healthy, I don't mean like eat chicken breasts and, you know, half a cup of rice and, you know, broccoli.
Just whole foods. No. Man.
Go for the skin of the chicken.
Right. Chicken thighs.
Yeah. Go for, you know, full fat ground beef, 80%, you know, ground beef. Mix it in with rice. Make your rice with some bone broths. You add some extra calories in there. Put butter in there, which is a good source
butter
of
butter in your coffee.
Fat. You know, cover your vegetables in olive oil.
It's the best.
You know, drink, if you can tolerate milk, drink a glass of whole, you know, organic milk with your meals. If you want to make a shake, make it with frozen berries, you know, add some, maybe some healthy protein, some peanut butter. Like, there's ways you can add calories, but, you know, in a healthier way, ways that are not going to make you feel shitty and make your performance worse. I remember when I was, I think I was 14 years old, 14 or 15 years old, my parents went to Italy for a month and a half. And so my siblings and I went and stayed with my grandmother. So I'm at my grandma's house and I have an old school Italian grandma, and her favorite thing to do is feed me. And so she'll just ask me what I want. And once she sees I like something, that's what she's going to make. She'll make a lot of it. So she's like, what do you want? And remember, I'm in the middle of like lifting weights and whatever. So I'm like, I like steak. She's like, okay, well, what about pasta? I'm like, well, I like this kind of pasta. I like steak. And then I like salads. So she's like, okay. So for a month and a half, my grandma made me like 2 or 3 steaks every day, every single day. Bowl of pasta, 2 or 3 steaks, whatever. I didn't have garbage. I didn't go to McDonald's. I didn't have candy, none of that shit. I just ate what my grandma made. And I gained like 5 pounds of muscle. And I remember thinking like, oh, that's what I got to do.
Everybody needs an Italian grandma.
I got to eat like real food.
Yeah.
That's what's going to put the muscle on me instead of what I kept trying to do.
I also think that there's a major individual variance between people too. I think there are exceptions to the rule, that some people just assimilate food differently, and their body will take Taco Bell, and they, as long as they train, their body still puts on muscle, and it's not a problem. And they don't need as many calories, maybe. So I think that you got to understand that too. If there's somebody who's asking this question or listening to us answer this question, and they're like, well, that's not true. As long as I do this, I get the, like,
yeah, you could still put on muscle, but at the end of the day, you got to ask yourself, okay, you want to gain muscle, but do you want to be healthy as well? Because here's what will happen to you, or here's what may happen to you, and the odds are actually quite high, okay? I know a lot of people in my age group and a little bit younger. I know people in their 30s and 40s who came up through the fitness industry alongside with me, and a lot of them did that. A lot of them ate the shitty food to pack on muscle. Most of them. In fact, if I think right now, all of them now have issues with food, digestive issues, have issues with either SIBO or they can't eat certain foods anymore, and now it's very difficult. So you might be able to get away with it when you're younger, but you keep pushing that, and then it'll make it harder for you to gain muscle. You know how hard it is for me to bulk now compared to when I was a kid? If I push calories now, my digestion starts to get thrown off.
Were you more tolerant towards milk and whey products?
I used to be able to take protein shakes from whey.
Yeah.
I used to be able to have milk and cereal. I used to be able to have gluten all the time.
Yeah.
And I've pushed my body to the point now where I'm hypersensitive to
shit. I know. I had a conversation with my friends, and that was like the topic at hand was just all those protein shakes. Like, none of my friends can drink milk anymore or like have anything dairy. And like, I survive somehow because I'm eating cheese like crazy.
Well, you think you survive.
Yeah, that's good.
Let me tell you.
I made it out alive.
We aren't making it out alive.
You get the backlash.
Next question is from Carolina Maspoli. If you're over 40 years old and train, you get better and stronger, but you are still getting older. How does getting older affect your progress in getting fitter?
Oh, great, great, great question. Towards the back half of my career as a personal trainer, a lot of my clients were in advanced age, so they were far older than 40. Most of my clients were 60 and older towards the back half. And one thing that I loved about training these people was just how much better I could make them in comparison to their peers. When you found, you know, when you see a 60-year-old or a 50-year-old or a 70-year-old who's exercises regularly and eats right, the difference between them and their peers is light years. Now, the difference between a 20-year-old who exercises and eats right, and an average 20-year-old, there's still a difference, but it's not nearly as big.
It's not as drastic.
No, man. The older you get, the bigger that difference gets. Now, does that mean that if you're working out now and you're 30 and you keep working out and you keep eating right and you turn 40, 50, 60, that your body's not going to decline? No. Age gets all of us. Mm. All of us are going to experience the effects of aging. But it is, you are going to...
You look like a superstar if you maintain your health and fitness.
Dude, I fucking tell you what, man. For most of my life, I was trying to be the buff dude in the gym. Now, because I got gray hair, I stand out more. Now when I work out, people come up to me like, oh, man, you know, how do you keep doing what you do? How do you look like the way you do? Because they look at me and they think, oh, this guy's a little older, but he looks relatively fit. And I don't look as fit as I did when I was 30. It just, it makes such a huge difference. As you get older, your body still declines, but you slow it the fuck down, and you maintain yourself way, way, way longer.
Now, that being said, I mean, I'm sure you guys have also trained somebody who didn't even get into fitness until they were in their 40s or 50. Even I've had clients that old that the first time they really decided to exercise and make healthy choices weren't until they were 50 and are 55 now or older and are in the best shape of their lives.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So even though, you know, father time gets all of us and it's the older we get, the more challenging it is to build muscle, to burn body fat, to move good. It doesn't mean that somebody who's 50 years old right now can't put themselves in the best shape of their lives. It's all relative to how you've been training your whole life. Now, you know, will Sal at 70 be as strong as Sal at 30? Probably not, because Sal's been consistent since he was, you know, 13 years old. So the difference between you at 70 years old versus somebody who decided to just start exercising at like 50 or 60 years old, I mean, it's all depends on the person and where they're at in their journey. Right?
No, fitness and nutrition is about as close as you can get to the fountain of youth that exists. There's nothing that comes close to what those things can do for your body and your mental health. I mean, that's another big one too. You want to talk about your mental health. The dementia rates are going through the roof right now just because people are getting older. One of the best things you could do to prevent dementia is lift weights. Lift weights, eat right. Your odds plummet in terms of your odds of getting dementia. It makes such a massive, massive, massive difference. I can't stress it enough, but you're right, Adam. I knew a lot of people, many of my clients, got in the best shape of their life in their 40s and 50s because they had never worked out before. And your body never loses its ability to adapt. Now, it loses its potential. So as you get older, your ultimate potential starts to drop. But the day your body loses its ability to get stronger is the day that you die. As long as you're alive, you still have an ability to adapt. And I've seen changes in people in their 80s that would blow you away. I mean, I had clients in their 80s who, needed assistance during their lives. And then they didn't need it anymore after training with me for a year.
Yeah.
They can now do function on their own.
I wonder too, and I know it definitely age is always going to be a factor. Patterns are going to decline, after a while have yield less and less results. But, if you're still working at it, it's still it seems like maintaining, but you're really just a bit above the decline. Right. But in terms of us getting stuck in certain patterns and certain ways of being able to feel like we're getting back in shape versus adamantly trying to seek something that's going to challenge us in a whole nother direction. I feel like that might be a factor too. You get kind of more set in your ways as you get older and you kind of know the formula, so to speak, and you're not really seeking that that real growth still.
Yeah, no, as you get older, your body's ability to recover and adapt slowly starts to decline. So the amount of workload that your body could handle when you're 20 is higher than when you're 30, and that's higher than when you're 40, and so on. Your body's overall potential for a beating, to be able to handle a beating, goes down. Part of that is cumulative. Mm-hmm. I've been working out for years, and so I've just got these cumulative little injuries that pile up. But it's also part of its age. As a kid, I used to be able to walk into the gym, literally beat the crap out of myself, and a day or two later, I'm fine. Now it might take me a week, to recover from something like that. Mm-hmm. And I just pay more attention to, and here's the thing, that the same rules apply. You should be listening to your body and modifying your workouts based off of what your body's telling you, whether you're 20 or whether you're 80.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that never changes. But it is the absolute most important thing you can do as you get older. And, one thing that Justin was saying, I want to kind of, reemphasize is, and I experienced this with some clients. I had some clients that were in their, 70s, who stopped training with me for whatever reason, and the decline that they experienced, it was so fast afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think people realize that workout, yes, we're slowly progressing, but we're also preventing this rapid decline that can start to happen, as people age. I had clients who, there's one guy I trained who was, 72 years old, and I mean, the guy would ride his bike all over the place, didn't even drive his car, worked out with me 3 days a week, worked out on ozone once a week, swam all the time, just incredible health and fitness in his early 70s. I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to be extremely independent and mobile till the day he dies. And there's no mm-hmm. doubt in my mind that guy's going to make it for quite a while. It was actually one of my more inspiring clients. I used to love watching that.
It's freedom.
Next question is from Ali Alessi, NPC. What are your thoughts on the whole body positive fat acceptance movement? Do you believe it's a step in the right direction for self-acceptance, or is it normalizing eating disorders and obesity? Do you believe there is any validity to health at any size?
There's a couple questions in there.
Yeah. I think we got to go back to shaming everybody.
Well, that's what I think. To answer the first one, we've answered all of this before, but I don't think there's health at any size, but I do think there is a large range that you can be very healthy at. Any size, no. I mean, you can't be 500 pounds and 56% body fat and be considered healthy. Absolutely not. That's mm-hmm. as about as unhealthy as you can possibly get. So no, there's not health at any size. But yeah, you could be, personally, I can range from 190 pounds to as heavy as 240, and I can be healthier or less healthy at all those levels. So your weight, your scale weight and size, less important, but there definitely is a
Have you guys seen the documentary Fed Up by chance?
No.
Okay, so I just heard about this and like was somebody was trying to break this down in terms of like two brothers. One of them was, they were feeding them this excess amount of calories. One of them was visibly getting, you know, more obese as the calories increased, where the other one was pretty much staying the same and like was like real lean looking. And then they did a type of like an MRI scan to show like the tissue, and the skinnier one actually was like way more unhealthy in terms of how they were storing the fat with internally. And just thinking about that in terms of like the perception of health and you know, like having like obesity as being a visible sign, like you're lucky in a sense on some level that it's like I can see like my body's reacting to the fact that I'm displaying like more of an unhealthy look.
Yeah, that makes that. I mean, that's true. I can definitely get on board with that. I also look, the problem with the acceptance movement is that a lot of people are they're interpreting it in ways to promote to make things less healthy for themselves. So, two things I want to talk about. First off, yes, you should love yourself. Regardless of what
everybody should,
yeah. Regardless of what you look like, you should care about yourself. Now, what does caring about yourself actually look like? It looks like actions that somebody would take that care about themselves. So, when somebody's 300 pounds and they're like, you know, no, I really care about myself. You actually, in some ways, don't care about yourself. If you did, you would not be doing things to your body that are making you unhealthy. Now, nobody's perfect. People who look very fit also do things to their bodies that are very unhealthy. So there's a little bit of a confusion here. I think what people need to understand is that you need to not identify with your body. That is not who you are. Right. Don't identify with it. Like, you have fat. You are not fat. Does that make sense? But yeah, this whole like, I love, you know, just the way I am, and let's eat whatever we want, and this is me loving myself. That is not you. That would be like me having a child. Imagine if I had a child and I'm just stuffing my kid full of donuts and everybody's looking at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I really like some. I love my kid.
Yeah.
This is how I'm loving my kid right now. I'm totally loving the fuck out of him. And the doctor's like, your son has diabetes.
Yeah.
I'm like, but I'm loving him right now. That's not loving my kid. Loving my kid would be like, listen, we're going to eat different foods now. Mm-hmm. You're unhealthy. This, you know, it's not working for you. That's how we need to do this whole fat acceptance, body positive movement. I don't think it's cool that people make fun of each other or, you know, make each other feel terrible for their faults necessarily. I know there's an evolutionary role for that.
Mm-hmm.
We evolved to where society or our groups let us know when we're doing something that's maybe not good. So I understand the evolutionary role, but I also know it's mean. I know it's not cool. I think people who make a point to tell people that they're fat or make a point to make fun of someone because they're fat is typically very insecure themselves and has their own issues. They're just not as visible. Their issues, just they don't wear their issues on their body. Like someone who's overweight, I think you should still have empathy and care, but real and true empathy is honesty and integrity.
The only reason why the only reason why this movement got any sort of fucking legs is because this is what most people want to hear. They want to justify their behaviors.
Right.
That's the reality of all this, because a majority of what's over 60-something percent people are obese, over 80% are carrying over 20 pounds of weight on them they shouldn't be. That all it is that a majority of people just want to feel good about where they're currently at. And the reality of it is that, no, it's not a – and whatever we traded for – you know, fat shaming, we've now replaced that with fitness shaming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that didn't exist to me I never saw that 20 years ago, where now you see people shaming people for eating healthy or being thin. So we just replaced one group of shaming for another group of shaming. We really didn't move anywhere as a society. I think it's really silly.
No. Yeah, I wish we were more supportive in terms of like progressing, like, okay, let's get you back on the health path, but not, you know, not be shitty about it. Not like shame or you know, be negative about it. Just be like, you know, as long as it's moving in the direction of improvement and not being so like outside of reality and the fact that, you know, you can't like pretend and like kid yourself that like this is not like it is a sign of unhealth. Like, let's be honest about it.
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, the person who bears the responsibility for their own health is themselves. At the end of the day, they are the ones that are responsible. We have to allow that to happen. We can't do the false pretend virtue signaling of all, you know, I love all overweight people, or I love all people, and it doesn't matter. And you know what? Just keep doing what you're doing. It's all whatever. That's pretend empathy. That's not actually real help.
You're not helping anybody.
No, it's like you have a friend who's a drug addict, and your friend comes over to you, and they're begging you for more drugs.
It's exactly what it is. You're an enabler.
Yeah, if you really like your friend, you're going to be honest with them and say, look, man, I ain't going to give you more drugs, bro. Like, it's not good for you. Like,
well, and I think that, I mean, this goes with a lot of my belief system in terms of, like, all these issues. Like tough love needs to come back. And it's love, but it's, you know, it's not always easy to hear. Mm-mm. And I think that we need to do a better job of delivering it. So it's like, you know, people don't feel like, don't abuse the fact that, you know, I'm saying it the wrong way to this person to make this person feel bad.
Right.
Like, that's not the way to use it.
If you really, really want to, if you really care about yourself, if you really love yourself, then the way you love yourself is through your actions. You take care of yourself. You have good relationships. You respect yourself. You feed yourself in ways that are healthy. Now, that doesn't look like a shredded person. That doesn't necessarily look like a bodybuilder or a bikini competitor. What it looks like is just you're healthy. And like we said earlier in this episode, health, good health comes at in a range. You can be really lean. You can be not as lean and still have exceptional health. Obesity probably doesn't fall in that category, though. And so you have to just be honest with yourself. And so it's okay to say, look, it's okay to look in the mirror and be objective and say, okay, my body is showing that I'm not taking care of itself, that I'm not taking care of it really, really well. Now, does that mean I'm a bad person? Does that mean I'm I don't deserve love? I don't deserve empathy? No. Doesn't mean any of those things. I am not this body. I'm within this body. So so that's what you got to say to yourself and just be honest and be okay. And that's it. That's all it is. It doesn't have to, the pendulum doesn't have to keep swinging so extreme in the direction of either make fun of everybody, make them feel stupid, ugly, and whatever, which actually drives more obesity.
Yeah.
It actually drives bad eating, bad eating issues. It actually drives self-hate, which then drives people not taking care of themselves. And then don't swing it in the other direction to where, you know, fuck it, eat whatever you want. That's how you love yourself. You just fucking give into everything and whatever and don't worry about it. And that's not the answer either. The answer is somewhere in the middle, not the either end. And with that, go to mindpumpfree.com and download our guides. They're all absolutely free. You can also find us on Instagram. You can find Justin at mindpumpjustin. You can find me at mindpumpsal and Adam at mindpumpadam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.